You're listening to Fake Believe, the podcast that gets some things right about conspiracies, cults, and cryptids.
Hi, welcome to Fake Believe. I'm Stacy, and I'm being controlled by a skeleton.
Scary. I'm Rachel, and I once bowled a 19 for charity. So, Stacy, I have a question about the skeleton that's controlling you.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so is it, like, inside you and controlling you, or is it, like, outside of you, like, an exoskeleton, and you're kind of in it, but then you would be controlling it? Or is it, like, a puppet master, like a skeleton, and then controlling you from above? Give me more details.
This is a choose-your-own-adventure skeleton. Whatever you think would, like, be the raddest.
Is it a nice skeleton?
Oh, it's a great one. It's high quality endoskeleton.
High quality endoskeleton. Endoskeletons, get your high quality endoskeletons.
Endoskeletons now on sale in our shop.
Bones. Oh, man, I was looking for an exoskeleton.
Oh, they don't have any in my skeletal size.
So an exoskeleton, you probably have to go a size bigger. And then, like, the endoskeleton, you size down. And then true to size, it would be the puppet master skeleton.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Nightmare on Elm Street 2?
No.
So I saw this when I was in second grade, and I stayed the night over at my neighbor's house, and his dad, in retrospect, I realized his dad was super young. He played Nightmare on Elm Street 2 for a couple of second graders. And there's one scene where Freddy, in the dream, he makes the woman's, like, I thought they were her veins, but they could be her tendons or whatever, just kind of pop out, and then he's controlling them like a puppet. And so I hope your skeleton is not like that.
Okay. I know I said it's a choose-your-own-adventure, but no. I'm just talking about this skeleton that everybody has.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It just sounded cooler if I said it that way.
It does.
I'm just trying to be rad.
I'm just mess everything up. You can call me Aunt Mess Everything Up.
Well, today we're going to talk about some mysterious disappearances. And no, I don't mean the direction of this bit. However, we got some good ones today. And yeah, we'll just go ahead and get started with them.
Great, because I hear yours is full of names and stuff that are easy to pronounce.
Your sources are not credible, unlike all of the other sources that we find.
Yeah, excuse me. I only use credible sources.
Absolutely. In February 1959, a group of 10 experienced Russian hikers embarked on a journey through the Ural Mountains. Only one of those hikers came back alive. When the bodies were found in the snow, the scene was quite disturbing. This led people to start thinking that maybe something sinister was the cause of their deaths. Some have suggested their deaths were caused by beings not yet discovered. Even precious science is having a hard time explaining what has happened. Today, we will be breaking down the theory of what happened to the 9 hikers in the Dilatov Pass incident.
And we're going to do it better than our precious scientists.
Precious science. Yeah, science explains everything except this.
So this is a side note, but when I was in my teacher education program, there was only one person in our cohort who was going to be a science teacher. And so for some reason, we just decided that that was the thing to really look down on him for and to, like, ostracize him for. And I just remember my friend Brian going, "I don't think so, scientist." And so now I'm always like, scientist.
You,
like,
it's scientist. A bad thing,
but we really love it, you know. But hi, Greg.
Shout out to Greg, the scientist.
Scientist.
So I'm going to be brief on the entire story of the hikers' backgrounds.
Okay.
If you would like to get a more in-depth look into this story, I'd urge you to read Dead Mountain, The Untold True Story of the Dilatov Pass Incident by Donnie Icar. This is where I got most of my information. So I listened to it. It was really good. And there was so much detail in it. And unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to fit all that into the format of our show. But I can tell you a lot.
Yay.
And I'm really excited to share it with everybody.
I'm excited to listen. I don't know this story. And I think that I was getting it mixed up with what movie is Alive based on, or what event is that movie Alive based on?
I don't know what that movie is.
It's a bunch of people crash in a plane and cannibalism. They end up eating each other, but after and it's based off a true story. And they I remember because they eat their friend's butt, not in like a sexy porn way, but in a
I was like, oh. I'm looking it up right now.
Mm-hmm.
The story of the Andy survivors, a Uruguayan rugby team's crash.
So not the same thing.
No.
So how did you first hear about it?
This, so I like to listen to the podcast, and that's why we drink.
Oh, yes.
I think it was actually M, and they're like the paranormal side of these things. And
because that podcast does paranormal and true crime. And yes. And does the paranormal part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I first found out about it, because there's so much mystery around it. That's why it was brought up. It could have also been Christine, who's the true crime person, but there wasn't really a crime. So.
So relatively recently then.
It was a while ago.
Well, I guess. So as a 42-year-old, if something was within the past 5 years, that's relatively recent.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes. Okay. Back to the show.
Okay.
Right off the bat, I want to explain why only one member survived. His name is Yuri Yudin, and he tagged along with the group. Unfortunately, he was not in the best of health conditions with his rheumatism and congenital heart defect. So he had returned back to civilization a mere 24 hours into the expedition.
Why would he even go in the first place with rheumatism and a heart defect?
He just was adventurous. So the incident had happened well after he had left, so he's really not a person of interest. As I say, this was a serendipity and dumb luck cocktail.
Ooh, so, that's my second favorite cocktail.
Second favorite. What's your first?
Just a can of whoop ass.
Oh, I didn't know that was a cocktail, but it is now, and I'm obsessed. Love it. When I first kind of heard, like, oh, only one of them survived.
Like, murderer! Like,
yeah, because that's, you know, how normal brains work, right?
Everybody thinks that somebody's skeleton ripped from their body, killed a bunch of people, got back into their skeleton, and then, I mean, into the body, and then left.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had to leave because of my rheumatoid arthritis.
No, rheumatism.
Rheumatism.
Fun fact, apparently people had thought that he had left the expedition because he had really bad diarrhea.
Oh. Sorry, I was speeding up, like, sir.
That was the rumor that was said about, but that was not what happened. He was just like, was not feeling great, and he knew he wouldn't be able to continue on. And I guess people took that as he had diarrhea. You can't fool me, Yuri. I know you had diarrhea. You gotta leave the mountain.
That is code. I'm not feeling too great. That is code for I have the shits.
Yeah.
I feel like one of the things that your generation and that Gen Z has given us is we're a lot more open now about gastrointestinal issues.
I feel like we're a lot more open about everything.
Yeah.
I'm a complete open book. I talk to everybody about everything.
Please let us into your secret society.
Please. I'm really good at secrets. It's just not my own. Okay. The group of grade 2 hikers was made up of individuals in their early 20s and one 38-year-old.
Go that guy. There's always one 38-year-old.
Of course. I'm young. I'm cool.
You guys need someone to buy you some beer? It's Russia. You guys need someone to buy you some vodka? They'll sell vodka to kids. This joke is in the land.
I apologize to any Russian listeners out there if they have any.
I super duper apologize.
So, okay, real quick, for context, the grading system goes from 1A, or basically just like a normal hike, to 6B, which is the highest and most difficult peaks.
The grading system of the hike itself.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's also kind of like your class for what level of hiker you are.
I see. Okay.
So, like, if you've conquered one, then you're considered this. So it's like 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, and so on. They're grade 2 hikers, and I'm assuming they're grade 2B because the group was hoping to earn their grade 3 certification after making this journey.
So is it 2B or not 2B?
That really is the question, though.
Sorry, Shakespeare had to come up for me. You know that about me.
It's okay. We'll cut that out tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
I did burst into delighted applause to hear my niece quote Shakespeare.
Don't get used to it. Okay, so their leader's name was Igor Dilatov, a 23-year-old radio engineering student. I guess he had to be an engineer to operate a radio at that time. They were big. You had to be super smart and not just be able to click the on button.
Oh, man, I'd be screwed. Engineers are also weird. I say that I come from a family of engineers. And they're weird, right?
Yeah.
So this guy, now wait, his last name, is that the name of the incident?
Yes. So the Dilatov Pass, it gets that name because Igor Dilatov was the leader. So they just named it after his like expedition because the whole thing is Dilatov Pass incident because it's describing the entire thing that happened. So like I said, it's in the Ural Mountains that was the landmass, and it's actually called Dead Mountain. So.
Was it called Dead Mountain prior to this incident?
Yes.
Am I spoiling things?
No, you're okay. Not spoiling anything. I already told you they all died. So.
That's true. That happened in the opening scene.
But, yeah, so that's why they named it that. But it was after the fact. But the Dead Mountain was before.
Wow.
Because it's so, like, cold and treacherous and everything. So even though it was only grade 3, it's still a pretty gnarly mountain.
Yeah. Especially with a big old radio strapped on your back like an exoskeleton.
Okay, well, fun fact. Igor actually didn't bring his radio with him. So... It was too heavy. So had he brought the radio, because actually a lot of people were criticizing him after the fact, like modern people. Well, if he's a radio engineer, why didn't he bring a radio with him? Because it's a giant radio and there's a lot to lug with it. And they also needed supplies and they were hiking. So would you want to devote some of your like energy just to carrying a radio and your stuff? No. Yeah, I mean, it would have been helpful in this situation, but also, as we'll kind of come to find, it might not have been as helpful. Anyway, the gang was all there, and I'm going to bring you their names in a segment I like to call Stacy Attempts to Repeat Russian Names.
Yay!
Stacy. Oh, that was Mario. Names.
Oh, shoot. That's probably under copyright. Fair use.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. Just put your thing over it, and then it's completely different.
I was also doing Mario.
Shoot. We're bad at it. This is why we don't have a proper theme song. We can't write one ourselves. So any listeners out there that are like, I'm really good at theme songs.
So wait, what is this? What is this called, Stacey?
This. Okay. Well, this segment. I don't know if it's going to be a recurring segment or not because it's pretty specific. It's called Stacey Attempts to Repeat Russian Names. Okay, so here are kind of the names of the hikers.
Okay.
Igor Dilatov, age 23. Yuri Doroshenko, 21. Georgi Krivonishnik. Shenk, obviously.
He did it.
Age 23. Alexander Kolevitov, age 24. Zineda Kolmogorova, age 20.
Mm.
Lyamila Dubinina, age 20.
Mm.
Rustem Slobodin, age 23. Nikolai Thaibo Brignoles? I don't know what inflections you're supposed to use for Russian. I'm missing this one a lot.
I always mess it up.
I feel so bad for Nikolai. Age 23, and Semyon Zolotarov, age 38. So, I am older than all of them except one.
Yeah, that's really sad. I didn't realize how yet. I mean, several of them are in their early 20s, 20 and 21.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it goes up to 24 until you get to that 138-year-old.
to Semyon.
So it's, obviously very tragic. They're very mm-hmm. young, and they're very capable. And, you know, like I said, they made a point in the book and everything that I've read. They were experienced hikers. So mm-hmm. it wasn't just like they kind of just decided to go on a hike. They did hikes a lot.
Right.
So, again, with them being young and healthy and experienced, they should be able to navigate this mountain just fine, and they have very basic survival skills, but actually, I'd say more than basic survival skills, and they're pretty smart.
Yeah.
There are some smart cookies. They all went to, college together.
And were they young men and women?
Yes, they were. There were two women. And that would be
Zineda and Lyudmila. Those sound like women.
Yeah, and Lyudmila. And another thing too, I mean, there's so many people named Yuri. So I know the second person that I named was Yuri, but that's mm-hmm. different than the survival Yuri. And then one of the people, was nicknamed Yuri. So it's kind of hard to keep track of the names as we were going on. So again, I do apologize for completely butchering them, but you can tell I tried. This has yes. been Stacey attempts to repeat Russian names.
La, da, 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 da. Da. That is also something you'll run into if you ever read any Russian novels. There's because every character has like 16 different names. So not that I'm an expert. I've only read one. It was
good. I don't really plan on reading too many Russian novels. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That was tough. But especially because, you know, I know I listened to the book, but not everybody was named multiple times for me to pick up on it enough.
And, the pronunciation.
For me to see it while it was being pronounced. So.
Right.
Get off my back! I am open to corrections. So, sad stuff, real quick.
Okay.
All but the last three had died of hypothermia. Those exceptions experienced physical trauma that led to their deaths.
Oh.
So, let's explore this further with the facts of the scene.
Okay.
When the group did not reach their checkpoint to send a telegram to their sports club, panic began to set in. It is way worse than when you forget to text your mom that you made it home, okay? You know, bigger scale. Bigger
Even scale. For your mom? Because your mom freaks
Even for
out.
Mine, yes. Yes, she did almost call the cops one time when I told her I was like, I'll text you when I get back. I'm going by myself in the dark, walking to go to them. But I have my dog with me, too.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, she had to go potty and while you're out there. And apparently, because she stopped to go potty, I took too long.
Yeah, your mom hadn't accounted for that in her schedule of...
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what to tell you how long is too long, but like, sorry. She was like, I was going to call the police. It's like, I'm sorry. But yeah, this is way, way worse. Like, I was never in a mountain. I was just walking by myself in a well-lit area. So as the snow began to clear, a search and rescue group came across the abandoned campsite. The tent was still secured and mostly intact despite the tear to the back of the tent that came from the inside.
The cut is coming from inside the tent.
You checked the hikers. Oh, that too.
So, okay, wait, how about what was the time frame here? They didn't check in. And so then was it like the next day that they went to look for them, or was it?
It was a couple days because the snow had to clear a little bit.
I see.
Because after, so they didn't telegram in, but then also like they were supposed to be there, like they're supposed to return.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't return.
Ugh.
And then they're like, yeah, it's been too long. Even if they got held back a little bit, they should have been back by now. And then, so I don't have the exact number of days. So this happened like February 1st, probably like mid-February.
Okay.
When they started. So, they were looking for them, and that's when they came across this tent that's cut from the inside. So it's complicated, but there is a measurable way to show how the tent was cut from the inside. Mm-hmm. In the book, they talk about this with a forensic fabric expert, and I didn't know that was a career, but it was so cool. It, like, they explained it basically in a way that like the pattern of a tearing, because it was cut for sure. But when you cut something, like, especially, you know, like a canvas tent, the way it tears,
mm-hmm.
you can tell if they were tearing it from the outside or from the inside. They figured out, like, definitively, and they, like, tested it, everything.
They're
this
certain.
Was cut from the inside.
Okay.
So, that's indisputable.
Okay.
Just, like, it's crazy. It blew my mind that, like, they could tell.
They can tell.
But, like... But if you think about it, you can kind of see, like...
Absolutely.
Just kind of imagine it.
Yeah, especially if you can look real closely. Especially if you're an engineer. Oh, he's dead.
Oh.
Oh. This was a long time ago, though, so I'm going to make dead engineer jokes.
Right. Yeah, it's fine. Okay.
Maybe not. I don't know.
I was going to say, great transition here, because... the first two bodies to be found were Georgi and Yuri. Both were only in their underwear.
Oh, what? And were they inside or outside the tent?
Everybody was outside. There was not a single person in the tent.
They were outside this ripped tent in their underwear. Okay.
And these were the first two people that they found. So seven people are still missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally find two men and they're in their underwear and they're dead.
Okay.
And near them was a tree with broken branches, which might suggest that they tried to climb the tree for a vantage point and then fell.
Or to get away from something.
Or to get away from something. It's
That's
possible.
Why I never trim my toenails, because I got to keep them sharp so I can climb trees.
Is that why? Kindly, you explained it. Gross. I guess I would have started growing mine out, too.
Ew, have you seen that trend, ew, of long toenails, like even fake toenails? Ew, don't look it up. Ew, it's gross.
I can't even. I don't want to think about it. Let me talk about these dead people instead.
Okay.
That's way better.
Better than long toenails.
Staggered about, the bodies of Igor, Zenaida, and Rustem were found nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all that they found at the time. So there were still four bodies missing at this point.
Okay.
So they have found five, and there's four other people that are unaccounted for. There was a lot of snow, so they were like, we can't do anything right now anyway. So 2 months later, the bodies of the remaining hikers were discovered. It appeared as though some hikers had died well before some others, as they had taken the clothing off their comrades' bodies to survive for just a bit longer.
That's why they were in their undies.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple reasons why they could be in their underwear. There's an actual term for it, but I it's escaping me right now. But
strip poker?
Close, but if somebody's suffering from hypothermia, they get so cold that it gets to a point where they feel
get warm,
hot. And then so they take off their clothes because they feel too hot, even though they're freezing to death. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they like went up to their dead bodies and pried their clothes off. It could have been that they got hot, or they thought they were hot and took off all of their clothes. They were definitely dead, and so the other hikers who were also freezing took those clothes because they were wearing the other's clothing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. As for the conditions of the bodies, some had a worse time than others. Quick warning that the following description is graphic. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
Layumila's eyes and tongue were missing from her face, along with some of her lips and facial tissue. Semyon was missing his eyes, and Alexander was missing his eyebrow.
That's strange. Missing his eyebrow?
Yeah, like the area, I think, of the eyebrow.
Okay. Like it got sloughed off.
So the speculation is that this was caused by rapid and isolated decomposition from the nearby stream.
Okay, so like the way they had landed had caused the water to flow over very specific parts?
Yes.
Okay.
So they were like kind of like face down in this water, and like as the snow melted and the stream began, it was just eating away at this one part of their bodies. So it decomposed faster than the rest, which is why things are missing. However, some people had speculated that maybe they were removed from something that was alive. So either animals or humans.
Right, or a bad guy. So
yeah, things from outside of this world. And again, it's like, why those three specifically? In the book, this, you know, some people had theorized like maybe, so Layumila was a woman, and they were like, maybe something, you know, a person was there, she threatened something, and so like to make an example, they cut her tongue out. So I mean, there's so many things that you can let your imagination run wild into what happened here.
I was thinking, like, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, but the eyebrow is in an ear. Unless
that's right.
He hears through his eyebrows because he's an alien.
I think they would have discovered that part. I feel like that would have been kind of harder to...
Yeah, maybe.
Because, yeah, I mean, but also Layumila's eyes were also not there. So it's difficult to get through. Their bodies were injured in some way too. So yeah, no, they were not, they weren't necessarily found together.
Okay. Oh, but these like were just the ones who were found later, the last.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. These were, you know, we're getting towards the end of the of them finding everybody. And those three people, unfortunately, had that horrible, horrible time. Whether that happened when they were alive or dead is not clear. But yeah, most people think it was decomposition.
Well, that's the most comforting theory, that's for sure, you know?
Oh, of course. Of course. Along with the bodies, the group's camera had also been discovered. One of the last photos taken seemed to be unsettling to some, though it was quite ordinary without context.
So I'm guessing it was a big pile of corn dogs, only the corn part had been unsheathed and it was in its own pile. Actually, it was totally disassembled. So it was three piles. It was a stick, a stick pile, a wiener pile, and a corn clove pile. Yeah.
Cornmeal.
And that was the last photo. And so everyone's like, that's fine. But then other people were thinking, no, that's disconcerting. Where did they get all those corn dogs?
Okay.
Why did they bring all the corn dogs if they didn't even have room to bring the radio? Oh, they didn't have room to bring the radio because of all the corn dogs.
Yeah, you're not allowed to choose your adventure anymore. I'm running the show from this point on. Okay, so the picture shows the hikers with their skis walking in the snow. It also shows some strange lights in the sky. Non-believers will say it's an imperfection with the camera, but the rest of us think there is something more to it.
Yes, lights in the sky, because this is the time, a camera in 1959. It's not like our iPhones,
right?
You know, this is a big deal. You don't just take a random picture or whenever. So if the last photo is something important enough.
Have you seen it?
No.
No, you're right, but like in the fake belief way. So, okay, to recap, the bodies were found in most cases improperly dressed. Most weren't even wearing shoes. The bodies of the group were not isolated near one another. Furthermore, the tent had been cut from the inside rather than going through the zipper that still worked. Shoes were left neatly stacked or put together in the tent. And the footprints in the snow suggest that everyone left willingly. Most of the hikers' things were still neatly in the tent. All but three had died from hypothermia, but the three outliers all passed away from blunt force trauma.
That's so weird. I don't know what to make of all of these clues. So the footprints indicated not a mad dash or a scramble, but just kind of an orderly walking out?
Yeah. So it was like they all just got
up. Without their shoes on, though.
Yes. They all just got up and walked out. There are also no other there were 9 footprints in, there's 9 sets of footprints in the snow.
No more. No less.
Know this. But also remember that it did snow and snow melted and, you know, things like that happen. So, I mean, just to keep in mind if your favorite theory isn't backed up with isn't backed up because of the footprints.
There's ways around. Yeah. There's ways around evidence.
Whatever. Evidence, shmevidence.
Yeah. That legitimately is a good point. How can they tell for sure? They had to wait for the snow to melt to find the other three. So how could they tell for sure how many footprints? Although I guess they saw the footprints probably before the... I don't know.
Yeah, but also you're taking into account just like one group's estimation, like the search and rescue. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that they could have walked up on there, maybe thought, oh, this extra set of footprints is clearly from somebody in my group, and it wasn't. I mean, there's again ways to work around the evidence. This is fake belief, all right? This is what we do. So now that I've laid out pretty much what it looked like, let's talk about the theories.
Okay,
this is the best part. This is why we do this whole thing.
Yes.
Not to talk about dead people. But, okay, the first theory that's given, I really don't like to mention it. I'm only mentioning it because it was a theory. It's total BS, though. People say that this group of Native people called the Nansem had attacked them. Mm-hmm. That's totally bullshit. They were peaceful people. They weren't around. They hadn't seen them. So, that's classic racism.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So they're peaceful folks. They had nothing against these hikers. There was no reason for them to attack them. So, again, only mentioning that because it's technically a theory.
Okay.
But it's not real. We'll get into the real ones later.
Nice.
I'm going to give you some more bullshit here.
Okay.
Like an avalanche.
Avalanches aren't real.
Avalanche. Okay, to clarify, yes, avalanches are real.
What?
Yeah, they happen, Rachel. Okay. So, here's why this theory does not hold up. This one is considered unlikely, because there were no records of an avalanche that day.
Oh.
So, nobody that was monitoring anything was like, yep, avalanche. So, how convenient that would be in this one spot. And how convenient that their tent would still be intact and all of their stuff is neatly placed.
Right.
So, like, at first you think, oh my god, yeah, if there was an avalanche, of course you might freak out, cut the tent, and run out without your shoes on.
Right, but then the avalanche would mess up your shoes.
Right, and also there would...
If you believe in avalanches.
Right, we believe in one. But also, there's really no indication, you know, that... I mean, it was staked... The tent was staked in the ground, but it wasn't, like, some super industrial-strength tent. I mean, it was just a, you know, regular tent. And that also, because of, like, the way that the footprints and stuff were, you'd kind of think that maybe... if it was that high that they had to cut themselves out of it, that they'd kind of have to, like, dig their way out.
Uh-huh.
And then the footprints wouldn't, you know, like, it would show that.
And even so, they would probably put their shoes on.
Exactly. Even if you're cutting yourself out of a tent, you'd throw on those shoes because you know it's cold.
Right.
So there had to be something, even though it says that they left in an orderly fashion, there'd be something that scared them out. And again, if they're basing certain things on the footprints as evidence, then it's kind of working against this avalanche theory because there's no evidence that they panicked because of an avalanche.
Okay.
Again, this is why this is considered such a mystery.
Because it's a mystery?
Precious science can't keep up with it. Okay, next bullshit theory. You ready for this?
I don't know.
High winds.
What? No, out. That's out.
One of the kind of like sub theories to this was that two of the hikers, because I, from what I could gather, only two of them were wearing shoes.
Okay.
The rest were not. So they were saying that two hikers put on their shoes and went outside to pee, mm-hmm. like as like potty buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not allowed to go potty by yourself.
No.
If you've ever been in Girl Scout or Boy Scout camp, you know that.
Yeah, I do know that. And I know the disaster that can occur from not being able to find a potty partner, and then that ends up with you peeing on the floor of your cabin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, they found a potty partner, but then it got really bad because the winds were so high it took them away, and they were screaming.
Oh.
And they heard, the rest of the group heard their screams over the high winds. And all cut themselves out of the tent and ran out without shoes on to go save the
bugs. No, no, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, so that one doesn't really make sense. But why would all of them go out? Even if somebody wanted to be a hero and run out, everyone else would be like, I understand that it's not smart for me to leave here right now.
Well, but and even in an emergency like that, to cut your tent when you know that you have to stay there, and by cutting the tent you could be killing everybody, mm-hmm. I don't think they would do that even in an emergency friend is blowing away situation.
Yeah, especially because the zipper still worked.
Right.
Unzip it and run out. Put your shoes on and run
unless it was a Russian Kyle. And he's all, time to cut the tent. And they're like, no, Kyle, no. Too late.
Kyle! It doesn't make sense. Also, because the tent was still there. I can't stress this enough. If the if all of these weather conditions were so bad that, you know, an avalanche or winds took these humans away, why is the tent still there?
Alien technology.
It does not make... Oh. So, also, they had reported, yeah, the winds were high that night, about 40 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
but hurricane winds are 74 miles per hour. So, high winds doesn't mean you're going to get knocked over.
How much wind pressure does it take to lift a person, to take a person away? If it's
that,
not...
I don't know, but I do know a hurricane can, and that's at 74 miles per hour. So, you know, these are the questions we need to be asking.
We need to get... Oh, sorry, scientists. Can you please figure out the required velocity?
Oh, scientists, we didn't mean anything. Yeah. You're precious. So, that theory, it's not really holding up. Okay, the next theory is that armed men were involved. And by that, I mean they had the correct number of limbs, but they had guns. So
they're armed and armed.
Yeah. The right to bear arms or sleeves, whatever you want.
My friend in eighth grade used to always mix it up and say it's the right to arm bears.
Oh my God. Okay. Fun fact, my shower curtain depicts a grizzly bear holding a machine gun riding a shark torpedo, like on a wave. It's like surfing on the shark torpedo.
Wow. That is even more random than my picture of deconstructed corn dogs.
But, okay, I have armed bears. bear arms. Okay, what I'm trying to say is that men with guns were possibly the reason why they left the tent in this way. So
I'm beginning to see how conspiracy theories get formed.
What?
So the theory is
logical.
People with weapons and arms.
Yes. How all of this would come into play, again, there's a lot of sub-theories to this one theory. So maybe the two that were wearing shoes were outside and they stumbled upon some people with guns and the other hikers heard, and then they tried to cut themselves out of the back of the tent, but were caught, and then they were told, keep walking.
So far, that sounds the most plausible. That was my initial... I mean, I don't know. It's just the cutting of the tent feels like a panic thing. So it's not jibing with the orderly exit.
I mean, again, if you're like, we have to run away from these people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's no time, like, be quiet. We're not putting on shoes. I'm just going to cut this and we're going to run. I'm arguing for this one, but I don't necessarily believe it.
Okay.
So, on this one. Because I'm saving the best ones for last.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah.
I wonder who started that. Anyway, sorry.
But so this is, it's one of the theories. Also, some people have said, because at first people are like, well, if it was cut, maybe people walked up and cut the tent and made everybody come out. But since they discovered it's from the inside, they were like, well, there had to be some reason for why it was cut from the inside. It could also maybe be they left from the tent. Maybe somebody came in after them and then cut and, you know, left. Maybe making sure that even if they did come back to the tent, that they would freeze. You got to get your mind as a killer. You got to think that way. You can do it. You have the mind of a cannibal sometimes.
The only thing I ever kill is a six-pack.
Oh, I'm loving these. Can of whoop-ass. The six-pack. Yes. Badass.
Yeah. Ant.
Okay. So, okay, again, couple reasons why this isn't totally holding up. For one, I kind of had to do some gymnastics there to get us to that point.
I did notice that.
Yeah, so there are still only 9 sets of footprints, according to that account. People think that it might have been military or escaped prisoners. There were no records of any escaped prisoners at that time, like in the nearby area. It had been thought that things were missing from the hikers, but they were actually all accounted for. It was just, like, somebody's item was categorized under another person's item. And so they, because at first people were like, maybe they came in and stole things. Nothing was really missing. People have also said that the injuries, like the blunt force trauma.
I was going to say, weren't some people's eyeballs missing?
Yeah, so some, you know, again, we did already kind of talk about why, like, the fleshy parts might have been gone. But as far as the injuries, so some think that, you know, they were beaten up. But it could also be that they had fallen into this ravine. And it seems more likely that it came from, like, their injuries came from that. From falling.
Okay.
As opposed to having someone beat them up. And then, like I said earlier, with the fleshy parts, this was a cool word, your fun vocab word for the week, microfauna.
Ooh, that, yeah.
That was in the water, and that kind of, like, ate up their faces, because it was hungry, microfauna.
Aww.
That could be why that scene was so graphic, was due to nature and not man. That is still a theory. It still could have happened. And again, they still could have been forced out of their tent by armed men and then fallen in the decomposition and all that.
Right.
So, we're going to move on from this theory, though.
Okay.
I'm done talking about it. I'm over it.
Okay.
The next one is weapons testing. Okay. So, the theories could be rocket tests because... in the sky around that time, people were seeing, like, these orbs. Uh-huh. So, you know, remember we mentioned the picture and I was like, yes, you know, light and stuff like that. These orbs were in the sky. So they're thinking, okay, either there was some kind of like military, like rocket testing, or this is a brand new technology that they're testing. And those are those light orbs that are in there. I should have written his name down, but, there was, I guess like a detective or somebody on this case. And after he had retired, he started speaking a lot more openly about the case and his uh-huh. own personal theories, not representing the police force, but himself. And he said that those orbs were energy bundles unexplained by science.
So where are you now, precious scientist?
Precious science. Yeah, now you can leave again once you talk to us about what it takes for an average human to fall over by the wind, okay?
You're dismissed.
Yeah, then you can go. So this was around the time of the Cold War.
Yes, era. And the space and race.
Yes, and the space race. So even though there was no evidence of this testing,
there wouldn't be,
right? Especially like if the Russians were trying to develop some new technology and then these hikers go missing and then end up dead and they have to admit, yes, it was this weapon that we're testing, but they weren't ready to say anything, like just like, you know, I was gonna say the word like strategically. I was like, suddenly this word makes no sense to me. Strategically. It wouldn't make sense for them to say anything, so they'd be like, wait, let me do my Russian accent.
Okay.
There is no evidence. No evidence of these testing. It's avalanche.
It's avalanche. See, I can't do a Russian accent either.
I was going to say, neither can I. I just like to try. Fun fact, I was in a play where I had to have a semi-Russian accent.
Ooh.
I did okay then, but everyone had terrible semi-Russian accents, so it was fine.
I was just going to say, Russia, don't get mad at us for anything.
Yeah, Russia's real concerned with us right now. This conspiracy theory podcast that's like very organized and definitely rallying people together.
I'm just scared. Because...
Hey, listen, Russia, come here. Come here. It's okay. Come here. Let me tell you something. We don't trust our government either. We talk shit on them too. So like, it's just, it's fine. We're not saying anything bad about you in particular. We just are equal opportunity government haters.
Okay, good. Anyways, we'll move on. We'll move past this. I'm afraid of Russia.
Okay. Now that we've got that out of the way. A little explanation on those orbs that people had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the actual incident occurred like the night of February 1st into the 2nd. People originally said, yeah, around that time I'd seen these orbs, but then their stories changed and they said, no, we actually saw them closer to like mid-February or late March. So the dates that I had written down were February 17th and March 31st.
Oh.
So, those wouldn't have been on the same day, meaning that it wouldn't correlate with what was going on at the time of the incident.
I mean, after the story changed.
It did change.
Yeah.
Yes. So, that's the thing. So, some people are like, no, they just definitely misremembered it. And then other people are like,
Yeah.
Other people like us.
No. Something. Did they change their stories and then the next day everyone saw them like driving Jaguars and
you know, I didn't follow up on that. But it'd have to see.
Yeah.
I think one of them was, you know, his name was something Putin or I don't know. No, just kidding. Okay. Russia, don't come after us. Yay. So also the rocket testing that they would have done, like any military bases, they were about 1,200 miles away.
Oh.
So in theory, it wouldn't have affected them. Unless, of course, there's some crazy things happening.
Yeah.
Some cover-ups. That's all I'm saying. So we do have that picture with the unknown light source. And again, some would say it's a camera flare.
Some would say
that that's evidence that that's actually when the lights were happening.
Uh-huh.
So, but another really strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
They did some radiation tests on the clothes of these hikers, and they were 2 to 3 times higher than normal.
In radiation.
Like the level of radiation. I apologize. That wasn't really poorly phrased. So, yes, they tested the radiation levels on the hikers' clothing.
Well, that solves it.
Maybe. Again, though, remember that for other theories, too. We could consider that there. I'm super smart, and I know you are, and all of our listeners are, too. So this sentence is going to make complete sense, and we don't need the scientists to explain that the beta particle decay was not abnormal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I guess that sheds a lot of light onto.
Yes. Basically, what they're saying is, it's totally normal for the conditions that the radiation would be higher.
Okay.
But it's also, again, when they were, the chapter when they talk about the testing and everything, it does kind of make you go like, well, wait, why is that normal?
And, mm-hmm.
You know, precious science is trying to come in and explain everything to us, and they do it poorly, and then we don't understand it, and so then we come up with conspiracy theories. So it's on you, science.
It is. Way to go, science.
Yeah.
Give us a way to interact with the world meaningfully and logically, and we will take it. If you don't give it to us, then
you're hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason why the radiation levels are kind of a big topic here, the bodies of the hikers were kind of like dark, the color of their skin was like darker or like orange.
Orange?
Orange-ish, kind of, you know? So people were saying, no, that has nothing to do with the way that... You're right.
So sorry. They were orangish. Their skin was orangish.
Yeah,
it's weird.
And also, one of the siblings, I believe, of one of the hikers, they said that when they recovered the body and then they were having the funeral, and they were like, it was weird. Like his skin didn't look right. His hair turned white, and that didn't make any sense. So it would just turn white and. He did not look like himself. Some people would say, well, that's because it was a decomposing body and they'd actually been in the sun, so it was a tan.
An orange tan.
Because Trump, of the decomposition.
He does love Russia.
Oh, Trump's dead. That's why he looks like that. And he's being controlled by a skeleton in that skin suit of his. I knew it! New theory.
It does go all the way to the top. Oh my god.
Oh goodness. Okay, yeah, so just the condition of the bodies had a lot of people thinking weapons testing was involved. So
it sounds, yes. Okay.
There is ways to explain it away, but there's also ways that it makes sense. So, take what you will.
Okay.
The next theory is that it's classified. Kind of goes with the same one as last time, but people have speculated that there are unreleased documents involved with the case because a lot of times, I guess in the Russian justice system, they would keep certain records and then for a certain amount of time and then make them public. And the fact that they even, or so they say, but I mean, like, they released documents about Stalin and all the horrible things that he had done. And then these hikers, he's like, oh, okay, so you don't know anything. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh, they know, but that's the one, those are the ones that they decided not to share because classified information. And yeah, it's been a while, but shut up. It's still classified. So that's really all I have to say about that one because it's kind of,
Right, what else can you say?
Yeah, it's hard to prove a negative and it's hard to say some might say impossible. It's classified. We don't know about it. Okay? Bye. So, next one.
Okay.
Also, very straightforward. Aliens.
Aliens.
And again, this is where you can come up with your own sub-theories and ways that this happened. So, we can say that their weird behavior had to do with aliens. Maybe, you know, bright lights were in the sky because they were UFOs with spaceships, and then everyone's like freaking out and running out of the tent, cutting out of the tent, like, what's happening? Oh my god. And then the aliens pick them up, and then when they drop them off, they don't actually drop them off where they're supposed to be.
Oh,
drop
shit.
Them off down by the ravine.
Oh, no.
And they're all disoriented because they just got abducted. And a couple of them fall off the ravine.
Oh,
and everyone's,
shit.
Like, freaking out.
Oh, aliens. What are you doing? Making mistakes
that's
like
what I'm
that.
Saying. Maybe the aliens cut out the tongue and they're like, what's this doing? And then she's like, ah! And they're like, oh, no.
They need
me. You mean
these.
Your appendages don't just come off? Sorry. Oh, it doesn't fit. Shoot, what do we do? Like, these are, like, dumb aliens. That's what I'm thinking.
Or malicious aliens. Or not even dumb aliens, but they just, you know, it's totally different. They could be interacting in a world that has completely different rules than our world.
I guess, but, like...
Could they be skeletons that hover above and control...
Exoskeletons pulling all the strings. Not again.
And they love corn dogs.
I love them so much. I wonder, were corn dogs a thing in the 1950s?
Hey, Siri.
1941. Oh, they totally had corn dogs.
Oh, my God. There's a corn dog theory. Because this was in 1959, right?
Yes.
I'm saying there's a corn dog connection here because corn dogs were invented when a lot of these hikers were about 4 or 5 years old. And that's probably,
sure.
I think, around the time where most people are abducted by aliens, too. So I'm guessing we just need to follow the corn dog trail.
That we just made up. We said corn dogs and that was a connection. Okay, yeah, okay. Now it's making a little too much sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Yes. All right, I got more to say.
Okay.
Wrapping it up, though. I mean, this alien thing, that's pretty big.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons. Maybe people really did see those lights again mid-month, and that's when they were dropped back off.
Right.
Who
and,
knows?
And this was the onset of the space race.
Yeah. Yeah. Why? Oh, yeah. So maybe the Russians... didn't want to land on the moon, and they let us win. Please don't hurt me, Russia. You let us win the space race.
I mean, I guess if you...
Because they didn't want to go up there. They're like, nope, screw
because
that.
Depending on how you're deciding who the winner is, I mean, they were the first ones to go up there. And so the Sputnik 1, October 4th, 1957 to January 4th,
1958.
Okay,
no.
So that's like a time to make contact with your little alien, corndog loving alien buddies. Although the corndogs happened before that. But if that was within a year, like after they made contact with aliens to come down and have this happen.
It could. I mean, also maybe ponder this.
Okay.
Maybe the aliens weren't even like making contact with the hikers themselves. They were just, you know, stopping on over to Russia because 1,200 miles away was that base that they were talking about. And they're like, okay, Google Maps says we need to go here. We need this turn. And they happen to go over the hiker's tent. And the hikers start freaking out and, like, you know, lost their minds because this brand new technology, like something they'd never experienced before was happening. They were disoriented. They cut themselves up. They started running and then they got lost. And then some of them fell and had a da 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 da. I think, okay, that's a pretty good case.
That is the only one that makes sense.
Okay, hang on though.
Okay.
Because... Here's the last theory.
Oh.
I saved this one for last because
okay.
It's great. Usually aliens is the last one because I'm always thinking it's aliens. Uh-huh, uh-huh. In this case, however, uh-huh. Okay, Precious Science did kind of come through on this one.
Yay!
It's kind of cool. I have to admit. So the final theory I'm going to bring to you today is that the use of infrasound, either weaponized or natural, is what caused this incident.
I have no idea what infrasound is.
Neither do I, but I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
Basically, infrasound is the opposite of ultrasound. So ultrasound is at like 20,000 hertz,
mm-hmm.
and infrasound is at like 20 hertz.
So it's too low for us to hear, whereas ultrasound is too high for us to hear?
Too high. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And where does the brown note fall on this spectrum?
I didn't look that one up, but by research of South Park, that did not come through today. But I do know that Casa Bonita is in Denver, so there's that. Casa Bonita.
That was fair use.
It was. Okay. So with infrasound, it's really cool because it was discovered by accident. Probably like the corn dog, but maybe not. There's a lot of great things that were found by accident.
I was founded by accident.
Oh, me too. Basically, what had happened was this team, they were working, and all of a sudden everybody, and they were precious scientists, and they started having nausea. And their eardrums were starting to hurt. Things were shaking in their lab, what they were working on. And sometimes they would have like more of a severe illness and it would last for days too. And so they're like, what is happening? After they ruled everything out, they figured out that one of the machines that they were using was emitting infrasound.
Mm.
So, you know, they measured it. They did all this stuff. And they're like, okay, so it must be that this noise is messing with us. So the reason why it messes with people so much, and like, I don't know why, like this just, it makes perfect sense to me.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like this happens to me all of the time. So the eardrums aren't, like the eardrums and the hairs in your ears are moving, but you can't hear it. So like the hairs are moving and all that, but your eardrum isn't making the... isn't doing its thing. So
it's not picking up on it, even though the hairs are moving.
Yeah. So your brain is like, wait a minute.
I should be hearing something.
Like, yeah, am I going deaf? What's happening? And it's like freaking out. And it's uh-huh. like, oh no. And it doesn't know what to do.
Here, have some diarrhea.
Yeah. Whoops. So it's not totally sure. And but then like you don't even realize that that's happening. You're not thinking I should be hearing something, but I'm not. You're just freaking out, mm-hmm. and you're anxious and all that stuff. So it was described, you know, silent but signaled. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it really is. And I love it, but it can cause people to just freak out and not necessarily behave normally. I wrote down a couple of examples of some experiments that they've done with it. There was the infrasonic 17 hertz tone experiment in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was like they had this orchestra and they had a bunch of people come in and the orchestra would play music, but a couple, like just two of these songs, they had infrasound emitting from backstage. They did not know that they were hearing that, but they were hearing it. And then people were asking them afterwards, you know, so how did this piece make you feel? And they were like, I felt really anxious, or I felt sad, or they're like, I suddenly started remembering like really sad events in my life, or like they weren't feeling great and they're fine for the rest of them. And nobody knew that infrasound was going to be involved. So it wasn't like, oh, this must have been the song or the piece when they used it. No, they had no idea. So that was a pretty cool experiment, kind of showing off.
It's a little scary. That seems really powerful.
Mm-hmm. On that note, with it being really powerful, mm-hmm. people theorized, okay, well, what if the Russians were using weaponized infrasound? So bad news is that since the wavelengths are very long, it's hard to direct it. So it's hard to not be near it and point it in the direction of somebody else and have them experience it.
And not you.
And not you. But so the thing is, though, I mean, like, you know, theoretically, they found a way to amplify it without making it a sound, but made it
a vibration that they aimed.
Yeah. And that they were not affected by.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't been weaponized as far as we know in a big, like, wartime scale. But in Israel, they have used it for crowd control. If things were getting a little too crowded, whether it was some kind of protest or anything, they would turn on infrasound and people wouldn't know what was happening, but they knew that they wanted to leave and they couldn't be there anymore. So as far as infrasound goes, I mean, in some rare cases, people can hear things that then, like, can become infrasound. And so there's something called the Windsor hum. People have experienced it even, you know, in North America, Australia and everything. They can kind of hear like a hum happening. And this is because of either natural or man-made, like, flocks, I guess. So, now because of infrasound, whenever people are, making a new building,
mm-hmm.
you know, the word constructing a new building.
I don't know the word. What do you think I am? A Freemason?
No, but I want this to be. So buildings are constructed to be shaped a little bit weird so that there can't be infrasound. So that the wind that's coming off, and especially in like windy cities, so that the wind that comes off of the buildings isn't creating infrasound and driving everybody crazy.
Oh my gosh, that explains Chicago.
Exactly. Chicago makes me crazy. Hey, what's up, St. Louis person? Saying mean things about Chicago. It's a friendly rivalry. So there's so much I could talk about right now. I'm trying not to go off on too many tangents, but the author of the book,
mm-hmm.
he goes and he talks to this person in Denver named Dr. Bedard, and he specializes in infrasound. And so he goes and talks to him and his team and everything. And at first we're like, no, there's no way that any like natural infrasound would have happened. And there's no way that anybody could have weaponized it. But then the author like shared some pictures with him and he calls him back. He's like, okay, actually there's like this dome on top of the mountain, like a dome shape. He said that could have been it. I mean, the 40 mile an hour winds that I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
the fact that it's dome shaped,
uh-huh.
They weren't hearing anything. It could have been, they didn't put on their shoes because they were just freaking out. They were not thinking clearly. They were starting to behave irrationally and they knew that they had to leave and maybe one person cut open the tent and then nobody else could stay in the tent, you know, anyway, like you're saying.
Yeah.
For survival. And everyone just freaked out and started running and then got lost and couldn't find their way back.
Yeah. So that does help a little bit more with the plausibility, because if you're kind of out of your mind, then that would explain why you wouldn't put your shoes on,
yeah.
you know, or
you're not thinking about it. And like, you know, your survival skills, in some cases you end up doing like dumb things because mm-hmm. one overrides another, you know, like if you fell and you broke your leg and you start running on it because you know that you have to go get help. Normally, if you have a broken leg, you're not going to run on it. But because your body is saying like, nope, this is what you got to do. You got to go. And like, it overrides that. So you don't feel the pain. You just run.
Doesn't the same sort of thing happen with hypothermia? So, I mean, that, like, this sort of kind of going out of your mind thing, couldn't that, like, be the cause just as much as infrasound?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think with hypothermia, and, I mean, I might be wrong on this, but I think that kind of part is, like, another factor, as in hypothermia in conjunction with dehydration or
starvation,
you know, starvation or something where mm-hmm. you're not getting nutrients and you're not thinking clearly.
And probably not all nine people, whereas one infrasound would affect all nine people.
Yeah. At the same time. And again, you know, maybe like the two that put on their shoes, they stepped out and then all of a sudden everybody started hearing it, but not hearing it and all mm-hmm. that. People that live nearby say like, oh yeah, we hear like, if you're not used to this sound, it could sound like, you know, something's growling at you or, you know, things like that. So there are so many cool things about this. Oh my gosh, please look up infrasound. Please read or listen to this book. If you want to know more, there are so many cool things about it, but I need to stop talking about it because in 2019, the Russian government reopened the investigation on the Dyatlov Pass incident. Uh-huh. And in 2020, the cause was determined to be an avalanche.
Well, do you trust the Russian government?
I plead the fifth. So I'm an American. I can do that. That makes sense.
So then, but what about them, like, wearing each other's clothes? Like, I guess that would kind of after the fact if they died and then.
Yeah, it's really explainable. That didn't seem as weird to me as the shoes did. Like, the clothes, again, because I'd heard of that before, heard of that happening. But the shoes, because the shoes were in the tent.
Yeah. I just don't know.
Something made them run out. It's the craziest thing. And I'm like, it just defies all logic.
Yeah, made them run out the back through a slit in the tent, not the zippered front. Which tells me they're not expecting to come back. Which
yeah.
could be avalanche. But still, I don't understand. I don't know.
But if it's an avalanche, then why is this everything undisturbed. Evidence?
I know.
Yeah.
Or why is the tent still up?
Why would they cut themselves out of it if you could see their footprints in the snow right next to the tent? Like, nothing about this makes any sense. And, like, as soon as you think that you've got a theory that you're working with,
it's
something else comes up. And that's kind of what he says in the book. He was like, you know, Sherlock Holmes said, once you go through all the possibilities and erase all of the impossible ones, whatever you're left with, no matter how improbable is the answer. And they're like, I've erased all answers. And really the infrasound one was like the closest that he came to. And that's probably why I'm leaning more towards that. But, like, there weren't, like, animal tracks, apparently, like, that were mentioned. So it wasn't, like, again, I'm like, did they hear something from the front and cut themselves out the back?
That's my first thought, was something was scary, was coming from the front. They couldn't leave. Something prevented them from leaving from the front.
I mean, also, maybe the cut could have been an accident. And then they were scrambling or something, and then it got torn open more and more and more.
And so then, like, oh, we'll just go out this way?
I mean, maybe they're like, oh, my God. And look, maybe they're going out to inspect it. Oh, my God, what did you do? And but then why are they leaving again? Why did they walk out without shoes into the snow? The shoes. I mean, seriously,
the shoes and the cut.
The shoes and the cut, I think those are the two biggest things out of everything. Because most things can pretty much be explained except the cut and the shoes. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. And really, this is why my section was so long. Because there was so much to get through. There was so many things to talk about with this case.
I mean, I could keep going, honestly.
I would. Like, I had to stop somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's so many other really interesting things about it. Again, you can learn more about the hiker's past and everything. But since I went so long today, surprise, we're going to split this up into two different episodes. So next, Rachel will discuss her missing colony?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess. Let's see who guesses it. Let's see who knows. Oh, we're being super sneaky about
so
it.
So sneaky.
Well, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next with Rachel's episode. And remember, this is all 100% real
and 100%
fake believe.
One theory we didn't touch on in this episode is the raccoon theory. No worries, though. Our next one is a raccoon-forward experience. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your own theories about anything we talk about. You can share them with us at fakebelievepodcast@gmail.com, or you can just mail us a corn dog. We'll know what you mean.